Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your handicapped host, James Cox. And that was my phone going off because I'm busy. I don't know why. But today I'm having a delightful conversation with my good friend, Tommy Giuliano. I don't know if I said that right, maybe, you know. But we're going to see about it because I said it right before. I don't know why I just sputtered out, you know. So today I'm joined by Tommy Giuliano. Got it right that time. A talented engineer who has worn many creative hats. He first toured internationally as a musician, crafting songs and live performances that connected deeply with audiences. That love of rhythm, energy, and stage presence eventually led him to the world of hypnosis, which we're going to talk in depth about, where for nearly two decades, he's been captivating crowds as a comedy hypnotist and helping people transform their lives as a hypnotherapist. Tommy, welcome to the show, brother. How are you doing?
James, I'm awesome. Every day's a good day. How are you, my friend?
Good. It seems like what's that band with all white with Mike Patton? That is the song Epic.
I don't know. I think of
Faith No More.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I always equate stuff with music, you know. And you wearing that white shirt just reminds me of your live performances because every time they wear a white shirt. So
I think of the band Tally Hall.
Yeah.
Have you heard of them? Tally
Hall? I have not.
Oh, you got to check them out. They're from Ann Arbor, Michigan. They I don't know their whole origin story, but they no longer make music, but they would wear like a dress down shirt, like a white button up shirt, whatever.
Yes.
And then they each had a different color tie that they would wear. So they would refer to each other by the color of their tie. And that was their name for each other. But yeah, they're a great band. Mm. Really shame they didn't take off.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing because I'm sure you've heard the story of Anvil. They were a 80s metal band way back in the day, and they toured with Slayer, Metallica, and all these big bands. But they were kind of phased out. So I don't know why bands go up more in their career, and a lot of bands fall back. You know, that's kind of weird to me. Since they toured with bigger bands, you know, I'm not sure why that is.
I feel like a lot of that has to do with the labels and the representatives, you know, how hard they push, the way that they push, the, you know, who are they branding them with? There's so much to it, but yeah.
So before I started researching you, I didn't get the name of the band that you were in. Could you tell me the name of the band?
Yeah, so there was a band that I was in and out of high school called Opus Podunk.
Okay.
It roughly translates to crappy music.
oh, come on now.
And we were a three-piece, myself, Stefan Schramm, and Mikey Rothenberg. And we were really well-known in this area. And we actually had a couple of record label scouts and touring opportunities that we passed up, and then we split up as a band. And then I was in a band called Amateur Hour for a little while there. My wife actually was in the band with me. She played bass in it. I was guitar. I was one of the two kind of front men in the band, myself, my wife, Samantha Giuliano, and Andrew Schloss and Paul Schloss. And that was really fun. We had some music on all the streaming platforms, but I'm switching over to a different streaming subscription, so I had to move it all over. It's not there yet. But And then I was in a group that traveled doing Renaissance festivals and different pirate festivals and those kinds of gigs internationally. And that's Boca Musica. I am no longer associated with them. I left that group a few years ago. But yeah, got to do some really cool things with them, writing pirate music. And, you know, I kind of look a little piratey, you know, the hair and all that kind of stuff. So it works. But yeah, that's kind of the music background there. You know, taught guitar for almost 30 years. And now I write for fun. I've got my studio. I got, you know, all the sound paneling and everything you can see in the picture. But, you know, I got my studio and I've got all my instruments just kind of sitting around. We don't do a whole lot with, you know.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, that's my music background there.
Are you a fan of the band Swashbuckle? Since you said you do pirate music.
I have not listened to them. I've been told that I need to, though.
They're so good, yeah. I have a friend, Paul Christensen, that was one of their drummers at one time. So we had some fantastic music. You know, be like a pirate guy, you know. I mean, it's insane, you know.
Nice.
Good stuff. But I do want to ask you one question. So on Apple Music, I found your name. Okay, I'm not sure this is you, but Bad Intentions.
That is one of mine, yeah. Yes, it was 2024 kind of thrown together.
Yeah, okay.
What's that?
Came out last year.
Yes, yeah. I wrote that one last year on my way home from work. And then I just kind of threw it all together super quickly, had my drummer come in and record drums, and I did everything else on it.
Yeah. That sounds more like a pop punk record, the pop punk song. You know, I know a couple of days ago, you know, you and I had a long talk about pop punk, you know. And you were wearing a Nirvana shirt, which spoke millions and millions of thoughts in my brain. You know, I love you as a brother right now because, I mean, Nirvana is like my favorite band of all time. Okay, here's something I don't understand. Why did I think that Nevermind was their third record when it was their second? I thought Incesticide was their second record, but it's not. You know,
right?
It's Bleach, Nevermind, and then In Utero. After those three records, what are your favorite? What's your favorite Nirvana record?
It's going to be cliche to say this, but I'm going with Nevermind. Yeah. It is one of the most perfect albums ever created, ever, ever, ever. That's up there with any Beatles album to me in terms of like the way the whole thing flows, everything into the next song and the bigness of the sound. It's just so Butch Vig killed it with with his mixing. I think that whole album is perfection.
Oh.
What about you?
I am very fond of Bleach, just because of Chad Channing, you know, the original drummer. You know, I think he murdered in Bleach. I know that he has some parts in Nevermind, as in Bloom and Come As You Are, I think. I'm not sure, you know, but
I know he came up with the drum part for In Bloom. That yeah, I know that's his. His playing, incredible drummer.
Yeah, because the song with the four cymbals, I don't know which it's on. Never mind, but he did those four cymbals. Like, yeah, he's like four. It's like anybody can just hit those four cymbals, you know. So, all right,
yeah,
awesome. So you toured a lot of places when you had your stint as a musician. So when you were touring, you were touring internationally in the band, correct?
Yeah, in Boca Musica, we did international gigs. Yeah.
So what's the moment from the road that still resonates with you today? I mean, did you take anything then that you incorporate now as your hypnotist?
I don't know about anything that I incorporate with my hypnosis shows and things like that, but I think what I think about most is the was it the first time or the second time? Second time we went to the Netherlands. And just like the shows were all kind of just typical shows, you know, the shows kind of blend together. It's when you're on stage playing it, it's the same thing pretty much every night. But it's like the off time, like the downtime that stands out when you're out doing things, right? Unless there's some kind of really notable thing happening during a show. But like for us, like we were just outside of Giethoorn. It was in the Netherlands, but ended up going into a town called Giethoorn, and it's all like canals. And we were doing a lot of like pirate music, like I said, a lot of sea shanties, you know, traditional music, but mixed with our own style. I was writing a whole lot of original music in that style as well. And we were on this little canal, like riverboat, and it just was like, it looked like a movie set, like what you would think of like the Shire in the Lord of the Rings or something. It looked like that if it was blended with Venice in Italy. It just like the houses were all just pristine. The lawn, it was like they didn't have roads. It was just canals that you were on a boat, you know, going through. And it was just beautiful. So we started doing like some sea shanties and stuff while we were going down the canals on this boat with whatever the captain's name was. I don't even know. But it was just so cool to do that. And it was really cool too, because at a lot of those festivals and those types of shows, last day or, you know, in after the last day, they'll have like a party with all the musicians from all over the world. So we had people from Ireland and France and Spain and, you know, everywhere just kind of coming in, and we were all singing the same songs but in different languages.
Oh, nice.
So we all, it was just, it's just a beautiful, cool experience to get to see, you know, people that you don't know their language. I couldn't sing this song in their words, but they're singing their words from this song that we all know our words to.
Right. So yeah.
We're all just, we'll do a verse and everyone will sing the chorus. They'll do a verse and everyone will sing the chorus. It was just so cool. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that stands out to me.
Yeah, there's still music does not have a language barrier, and I'll tell you why.
No.
Okay. Oh, I know that you know of the Who. It's you. They're like a Mongolian metal group. They're fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they did a cover of Wherever I'm in Rome by Metallica. You know,
mm-hmm.
Even though I didn't understand what they were saying, I understood everything that they were saying. Does that make sense? You know.
Yep.
You don't need to know. Like music is a unique, very upper art form, you know. And like I said before, even though you may not know the song by the words, you feel it, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you felt very, very powerful when you were singing those songs, then, you know, and they were being sung back, you know. Right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's amazing, you know, because I don't know how, there's something about music that just transcends time and space for me sometimes, you know?
Well, it kind of, like, if you think about it, like, when you go to a concert and, you know, you're singing along with the band when they're on stage, and you've got 10,000 other people, fans in the audience singing along at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of a feeling. It's just a little bit different when it's a smaller group, but it's that sort of a feeling of like, we're all hitting the same frequencies, right? We're all hitting those same resonances. So it's just really, you can't really describe it with words. It's an experiential sort of thing.
Right. Well, words failed, you know, music spoke. Yeah. So
that's it right there.
Yeah. Now you've been to a lot of concerts. I would imagine, seeing other bands, you know, and not just playing live. Did you have one, concert that was like a big, letdown, you know, cause I've had one, I'm going to tell you the band's name because they're not a band anymore. It's 3 Inches of Blood, and I slept their whole set. They were so, I mean, I didn't, I didn't really dig them, you know? I don't know why, but yeah. they just didn't put on a, I don't know. What was there like a...
I guess I have two that I'm kind of disappointed in yeah. for different reasons. The first one was Sum 41. They came and they did a show at, I don't remember the location. It was a smaller place because it was for a radio show in Detroit called, it was the Dave and Chuck the Freak.
Okay.
Yeah, they had what they called, and pardon my French, this is just the name of the event. It was the Friday Bitches Ball because they used to say, it's Friday, bitches. so that was their whole thing. So Friday Bitches Ball, Sum 41 came one year, and it was a small venue, but they were cranked up like they were playing a massive arena. And it was one of those things. It was so loud. I came with my she was my girlfriend at the time, my wife though, and then some friends of ours. We all rode together and we all collectively said, "Let's go," because it was so loud it physically hurt.
Right.
And I've been in bands rocking out half stacks and full stacks and with my Mikey's cymbal hitting behind my ear, you know, like I know I'm good with loud. This was like next level loud. Yeah. It hurt physically. So we were bummed to leave that. We stayed for one song. And then, it hurts my heart to say this, but I was a little bit unimpressed watching Incubus.
Really?
They sounded perfect.
Yeah.
They sound the vocals, the guitars, everything was mixed perfectly. It was the perfect blend. Didn't miss a note, didn't miss a beat. It was beautiful. If I partook in marijuana, it would probably have been a lot more enjoyable for me.
Right, yeah.
It was just so mellow. Like even the heavy songs, like he wasn't jumping around much. It wasn't like energetic. Right. It was very much him standing at a microphone and just singing, standing at the microphone.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, it's cool seeing you there.
Right. But when you go to a show, you expect a whole lot more.
I was hoping for some more energy. You know, you play a song like "Pardon Me." How are you not like moving to it, right?
Badass song, right?
You
right.
know, I mean, so yeah, I mean, I think those are the and like I said, I think most disappointed in Sum 41 because of the volume, but their energy was through the roof, and then I was really happy with the sound of Incubus, but just so disappointed in the energy. Yeah. It reminded me of 311. Like I've seen 311 and they're good.
Yeah.
I love 311. You expect them to be pretty mellow.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah.
Even their higher energy songs, you know, are somewhat of a mellow vibe. Yeah. Either way.
Yeah, I had a big problem with Slayer because they almost bursted my eardrum, you know. Because okay, so I saw them at Myrtle Beach, and, you know, and that includes that's not outside doors, you know. And they just had their amps like turned up to like 21 as opposed to 11, you know. And after I heard my favorite song, which is Disciple, I just said I got to go out because my ears gonna bust open. I'm like, I don't want to do that, you know. So that's my other. That's not really great, but it's like if you're playing inside, turn down your, you know, amps, you know, tremendous, yeah. You know. So,
it got to the point like I started jamming again with my drummer from high school, Mikey Rothenberg, who is I would say the greatest drummer I've ever heard of all time, yeah. And that is an understatement. The guy is incredible. But we started playing again, he and myself and my wife, just kind of jamming for fun here in the studio. Yeah. We reconnected and it was just so cathartic and awesome. Oh, but it reminded me how loud band practices could be with a drummer who really hits the drums.
Yeah.
You know, not with me just kind of playing to play like Garth on Wayne's World. but you know, I ended up buying these earplugs. I don't know if you see them. They're called Eargasm. Yeah, yes. Your gas was great.
I got from it. Yeah.
Where you can still hear, you know, most of the frequencies, but it tones it down a bit, you know, enough to be tolerable. So it's like I had to get those just to play in this, you know, little three piece here. But now when I go to concerts, that's what I'll wear.
Yeah. Well, most times I have used to go to concerts. Mm. But when I had those eargasms, I went there with like a GWAR show, and it just totally, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm really bad at putting in like earbuds. So uh-huh. I'll be sure these are perfect for me. But
yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah. GWAR is a killer show if you've never seen them.
I've seen videos of their shows. They look like they put on a good show. I've never been to a show, no.
You need to go, brother. It's so great. You know, they're such a good guy. So, okay, so this next question mentions hypnosis and music get together, so I figured that, you know, we can talk about this some. So when you were playing, did you ever perform a song or even have a song that felt almost like hypnotic to the audience or even you, you know, and that transcended your journey as a hypnotist?
Did I ever play a song that felt like that?
Or did you perform like a great performance that might have been almost hypnotic to the audience? Or even you?
I think a lot of our shows as Opus Podunk were pretty hypnotic, especially toward the end. There was a song that Stefan wrote called Now Who's Laughing. I want to like sneak release the song. It's never been released. I have the recording. I want to release it. It's one of the few that I'm like, I listen to this and I'm like, oh, it still hits me. Yeah. But it had a lot of cool stuff going on. Like a doom, 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 doom was like the whole bass line. And then I'm hitting just harmonics on the guitar. And there's like this little like shuffle beat going on under. It was real funky kind of feel. And then it would come in real heavy. And some of our fans had this like choreography that they would do. So they would do this like stupid, I say stupid lovingly, but right. This like stupid little dance to the song. And you'd watch the whole audience doing it. Even people who didn't know the song that were coming in, they would be following along, you know, just because it was so simple and whatever. But that was pretty hypnotic because you'd see this like whole crowd full of hands doing like this across the, right. The front of you. And it was like, well, that's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
You know, the song itself had this very like hypnotic sort of like trance inducing quality to it anyway. And then, to see that out there was like, yeah, that's cool. And then as far as like, one of the only songs that's ever hit me as like a really solid hypnotic song for me that I didn't have a part in writing was Supermassive Black Hole by Muse. The first time I heard that song, I had to pull my car over because it was on the radio. I had to pull over. I was on my way to my now ex-girlfriend's, but my then girlfriend's house. And, I was at her street and I had to pull off and just sit and listen to it because it just like it hit me in this just everything about it. I just couldn't get enough of it. I had to like Shazam it back in those days.
Yeah.
Thank God Shazam existed because no, Shazam didn't exist yet.
Oh, Soundhound did.
Shazam didn't exist.
Soundhound.
I know, but they happened to say the name of it on the air.
I love it when they do.
Which they half the time they don't say the name of the songs. So right. I was thinking I was screwed, but I heard it and I was like telling it to myself over and over on my way to her house. I got in the door and I had to write it down. And then I went on to iTunes that night and I bought the song because I could not buy it.
Right.
And then I found out like it's the same band that did Starlight and, you know, all these other ones. And I was like, okay. And so I bought that whole album, but Supermassive Black Hole tripped me out, and it still does. I can still sit and just like listen to it with my eyes closed and just take it in.
Yeah. iTunes, man, you brought back like a lot of memories because I used to, man, look, okay, so I used to do that what was that mail-in stuff where you like send like a penny and they send you like all this music. I tried to do that, like from his house. I don't know. It was back in the 90s.
Napster?
Know. No. No, because they used to snail mail you.
Oh.
Music, but then you paid like a penny or something. And
I never did that. I didn't know about that. Yeah. I knew about Napster and iMesh and LimeWire and all the like pirating stuff that would give you all the viruses that were so much fun.
ShareBear, you know.
Yeah. With the, yeah. Pirate Bay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, because I used to do that, you know, but that was when I had like an iPod, you know, so I can easily hold them in my pocket or something, you know. But So music is often described as hypnotic, which we just talked about, you know. And this goes along with your hypnosis shows now. Have you found ways to weave rhythm sound from like or even like a musical phrase into your shows now?
Yeah, when I do shows, I often will use, I guess, call it meditative music, where it's just kind of droning undertones. You know, sometimes a little chime will come in, or you'll hear like waves crashing, or else it'll be kind of those sort of sound effects. I look for, and if I can't find good ones, I will make them myself with my own software. But I look for songs to, as I'm hypnotizing the audience, because I hypnotize the whole audience in my shows.
Yeah.
And then I pick the people who are going to have the biggest reactions based on certain instructions that I give. But what I look for when in a song is I'm looking for specific frequencies that will bring about alpha or theta brainwave activity. And so reducing the brainwave frequencies to essentially bring about more receptivity for instructions and suggestions. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So I do that when I'm hypnotizing people. And then throughout the show, I use music in my skits and everything. So, you know, I often will have people think that every time they hear, you know, Yeah by Usher, their feet start dancing uncontrollably, but only their feet. Nothing else. Okay. They're sitting in a chair. Yeah. Only their feet are going crazy, and they're going crazy. And so every time they hear that, and then I'll play something, you know, something else, Get Low or something like that by Flo Rida. And then I'll make it so only their face can dance when they hear that song. And so they'll be sitting there making faces and just like, you know, their tongue going crazy and stuff. And
right.
You know, one that I got from my friend Tom Silver was every time they hear an Irish song, it would cause them to become river dancers. And so they jump up out of their seat and they start river dancing, right? You know, he used to do that in his halftime hypnosis shows. And yeah, lots of stuff like that. I use music a lot because it brings about different energies in us. And, you know, one thing, too, that I like to do is, are you familiar with the Benny Hill theme song?
Yeah,
that one.
Yeah.
I tell people that I'll tap two people and say, this person is named Bubba, and you're the only Bubba in the world. And you get really mad when someone else claims to be Bubba. And then it turns into a Bubba war. And so every time I say, what's your name? They say, Bubba. No, I'm Bubba. And I go, you know what? I think I know how to settle this. I was reading on the internet that Bubba is the best dancer in the world. And only the true Bubba can dance correctly to this song. And I hit play and they jump up and they start dancing and doing like chicken moves. And it's just so funny. But it's like music sets the tone for the whole bit. Right.
Yeah.
So it starts off that slow, like droning kind of stuff, gets them into that hypnosis state of mind and that receptivity. And then it moves into more high energy and builds it all up and gets those gamma waves going in their brain and gets them moving. And then just throughout the show, throwing it in there, you know,
I love that. You know, it seems like you have a very safe and friendly show, you know, which
all of my shows are family friendly. Yeah.
Which brings me to my question for you. Well, this kind of coincides with what we talked about a couple of days ago. Okay. So I'm a Christian, and I found out that you're a Christian too, right?
Yes.
And then we talked about this in length the other day, everybody. And so there's a lot of judgmental Christians, I guess, is coming to your shows, right? And saying that hypnosis is not a godly thing, you know? And you, so can you shed light into people who don't believe that's a godly thing?
Sure. I wrote a book about it. Not that you can see what it says.
Well, yeah.
But it's called Transformed. I don't know if it'll show up on there.
Yes.
Hypnosis Through the Lens of Scripture. It's only on Amazon because that's where I published it. But I worked with my pastor. I worked with another pastor. I even worked with a priest. And we sat down because I approached this from a standpoint, and I used that as my reason to do research as well. So as I was researching and going through my journey of figuring out, is hypnosis allowed? I was writing about it, and that's that book. And my whole mindset was, if I find anything biblically that does not allow for hypnosis to be utilized, I'm done with it. I don't want to be wrong with the big guy. That's you know, God is the one entity in the universe you don't want to be on the wrong side of.
No.
And so I dove into scripture, and I was looking into like all the Bible verses that were thrown my way about why I should not practice hypnosis. You know, First Peter comes to mind, where they're saying, you know, be sober minded. You know, the enemy, the devil, you know, is prowling like a lion looking to devour you. There's also in Deuteronomy, it talks about not allowing for, you know, psychic mediums and necromancy and those sorts of things. And so there's a lot of those kinds of verses thrown around in there that have been tossed my way by Christians who meant well. What they failed to do was research hypnosis at all. Because if you take it at face value, it looks like mind control. It looks like people releasing their faculties to somebody else for control. And that is not actually a thing. Now, there is a heightened sense, an amplified sense of receptivity that comes with hypnosis. You have your own morals, though. For example, I have had people on stage who I told them that they were going to forget their name. And they didn't forget their name. Their name stayed with them, and I asked them about it afterward, and they said, my name is a family name. It was passed down to me, and it's extremely important to me, and I just couldn't let it go. And I was like, that makes totally sense. You know, you can't be made to do something that goes against what is most important in here. If you're against violence and I tell you to hit your neighbor, you're either going to wake up. You know, I say wake up as if it's sleep. It's not sleep, but you're going to either come out of that state or you're going to ignore the suggestion entirely. And so hypnosis itself is, simply put, a brainwave frequency state of heightened receptivity and focused concentration. So essentially, if you think of it this way, our brains are generating electricity all the time, right? It's measurable through an EEG. When you hook someone up to an EEG under hypnosis, and Tom Silver was a pioneer of this and really, really showed beautifully how, scientifically speaking, hypnosis is a natural state of mind. Right now, we're talking. We are in what would be considered beta, the beta brainwave. So that's going to be 14 to 30 hertz if you're looking at the measurements, okay? The second you close your eyes, you are instantly into middle alpha. So you're going to be about 10 hertz. So you're dropping down that much, which is the entrance into hypnosis. So, and that's one reason why when we pray, we often close our eyes.
Yeah.
When we when we get a back rub or something like that, we close our eyes. It feels better when we close our eyes.
Feels so good, right? Dude. Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
We listen to a great song. We absorb it better when we close our eyes.
Yep.
You know, it's the same thing as when we're driving down the road and you are in a new area and you're looking for the address on a house and you turn the music down, right? Well, it's not that turning the music down somehow makes you see better. Right. What it does is it helps you reduce the brainwave activity so that you can concentrate on the task at hand and receive, your receptivity is enhanced. So you receive that information better when for what you're looking for. I explain it this way in my shows. Hypnosis is simply, it's like focused imagination. Right. So it's the daydreaming state of mind. If you're daydreaming, if you're zoning out, you're driving down the road and you get from point A to point B and you have no recollection of what's in between. That was hypnosis. Right. If I were to say we've all had a bug land on us sometime in on our face, like a mosquito or a gnat or a fly. We've all had that happen to us. And we can think about that if we closed our eyes and we think about what that feels like right now. And we can feel like the little feet or whatever it is. And the more you think about it, the more you think about how it feels to feel that, the more you start to feel it. And the more you notice you feel it, the bigger the feeling gets. And that is hypnosis. Every single time I do that in a show, there is at least 10% of the audience doing this on their face because they're imagining it and their mind is making it real. That's all hypnosis is. Now, can hypnosis be used improperly and for bad things? Absolutely, it can.
Yeah.
However, that's the same with any tool. So by that logic, a hammer should be considered to be immoral too, because a hammer can be used to cause great bodily harm and has been used to cause great bodily harm to people. But a hammer is not immoral because it is amoral. It depends on the person wielding it. Right. So if someone is holding a hammer, they can be fixing a loose nail in a board so nobody trips on it. They could be building a church, right? They could be smashing someone's hand intentionally because they were mad. It depends entirely on the morality depends entirely on the person, not the tool. And hypnosis is a natural brainwave state that is a tool for receptivity and receiving information. So can it be used improperly? Yes, it can. Just like anything else. Alcohol is not an immoral substance. However, consuming too much of it is.
Right.
You know, drunkenness is the immorality. Consumption of alcohol is not immoral.
Yeah.
So
I guess it would be more like a moderation type of thing, you know.
With alcohol, it's a self-control thing, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Hypnosis is just it's an amoral tool. It's just it's a natural state of mind. If it comes about all throughout the day, we just don't simply call it hypnosis because hypnosis is the technical scientific term for it. And right. We don't often use technical scientific terms. We say daydreaming or we say zoning out or, you know, falling asleep.
I think the reason why is because everybody understands what those words mean, you know.
Yeah.
Because if we say anything about hypnosis, they're like, the hell's that?
And Hollywood has done a number on hypnosis, on what it is. People have a misconception about it, and other hypnotists have done a number on hypnosis, you know, in lessening its credibility and scientific approach. It's become more, we'll call it just alternative in terms of, right. of you know, treatments. And it didn't used to be. It used to be medical doctors that were utilizing hypnosis. That's how it started, and that's how I want to get it back to.
There you go. Well, so you mentioned Mr. Tom Silver before, so I want to give you the platform to talk about your foundation, the Tom Silver Foundation, and let you cover all of that. Yeah.
Oh, that, I appreciate that. Yeah, so Tom was an amazing, amazing man. He had been doing hypnosis for over 40 years when he passed. He taught hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people, many of them medical doctors all over the world. He taught medical doctors all over China. And if you know anything about Chinese doctors, they scrutinize. Yeah. They are very, you show me the proof. Show me the proof. And he became so beloved over there because he did. He showed them the scientific proof. He backed it all up. He passed away. I became very close friends with him back in January of this year. And we met at the Performing Hypnosis Summit out in Las Vegas, which is an amazing summit. Anybody who likes performance hypnosis should go. But we met there, became instant friends, and he immediately took me under his wing, and he started talking to me about how, you know, I wanted to do halftime hypnosis shows for the NBA like he did. And he goes, I'll teach you everything. I'll teach you everything. And he goes, now, how many hypnotherapy clients do you have? I was like, I don't really do hypnotherapy anymore. I was told I'm not a hypnotherapist. I was told I'm a comedy stage hypnotist. And I wasn't told that maliciously, by the way. I was told as a branding thing. You can't do it. It's a branding thing. Brand yourself properly kind of thing so that you get those shows. And he said that that was the wrong approach and that I needed to be doing hypnotherapy too. And I was like, well, here's how I've always done it. It's different than other people are doing it. He goes, no, you're doing it exactly the way I do it. Hmm. I was like, oh. He goes, yeah, you're doing it the right way. And so he and I bonded around that. He ended up walking me through his techniques, a technique he called emotion replacement therapy, which is extremely powerful and impactful. And it's the sort of thing that he was helping people who were addicted to cocaine in one session be completely free of cocaine. They had no more addiction to it. No more desire, no more want, no more thoughts about it. And it was so profound to watch this. And it was similar to what I was already doing. So he certified me after months of going through these online Zoom lessons with him. He licensed me. He went into hospice in May. And I believe it was May. Or it was the end of April. Either way, my good friend Israel Mandrake, who I had also met at that same summit, super cool guy, also a musician. He'd be cool to talk to. But he and I had both been very close to Tom at that point, and he called me up one day, and I had been thinking about going out to visit Tom and surprise him if he'd be down for it, and so. Israel called me up one day. He goes, man, have you heard from Tom lately? I'm worried about him. I know he's in hospice and he's not responding. I said, he responds intermittently to me. I haven't gotten a lot out of him. His wife says, you know, his wife, Suzanne, was kind enough to respond to my text messages that were kind of out of the blue, just going, is he okay? Is he alive? And, you know, he finally reached back out and told me he was fine. But Israel and I plotted to go see him and surprise him. So called him up one day and I was like, hey, Tom, Israel and I are going to be in Las Vegas for a few days in the next week. Are you going to be around to do lunch one of those days? And he's like, tell you what, why don't you come over each day and I'll license you in and make you so you can teach my methods. Nice. I was like, oh. Let's do it, you know, and he ended up giving me all of his training materials. He ended up licensing me. He ended up certifying me. My certificate's there, you know, like giving me all and same thing for Israel. And he died just a couple of days later. And I had been keeping in touch with Suzanne, checking just to see how she's doing and all that kind of stuff. And also sharing my feelings. Cause I had become so close to him. He felt closer to me than a lot of my family at that point, because we were talking daily for all these months. And then suddenly it was just gone. And he just had this way about him. He would help people through the hardest times and often wouldn't even charge them. And so Suzanne and his stepdaughter, Mariah, basically his daughter, you know, she saw him as dad. He saw her as daughter. So keep the step out of it. But except for the technicality, right? But
right.
But they were so close. And so they wanted to form a nonprofit to keep his legacy going and to share in that, you know, that movement forward in science and with hypnosis. And I offered if they needed help with anything, I would be happy to help. And then they offered if I would like to be part of this organization. And so Israel and myself are also board members of the Tom Silver Foundation, which is a nonprofit. It is finally all squared away nonprofit. We've got our papers and all that stuff that is dedicated to teaching and informing people on the science of hypnosis, especially the medical community and its many, many, many uses, not just quit smoking, not just overcoming depression and addiction and things like that, but it is a healing tool. Most people don't know this, but Harvard did a study with hypnosis. They found that people with broken bones, they did a study, I believe it was with 12 individuals. They had broken bones, and I think they were expecting the healing to happen over a course of 9 weeks for these broken bones. When they utilized hypnosis, it went from 9 weeks to 6 weeks. Damn. So it was a 30% improvement in 30% acceleration rate for their healing time, which is huge. But a lot of people don't know that. Most people don't know that. Even doctors don't know that. But that's something that you would think they would want to explore. Right. But so we want to do that. Tom certified so many doctors, and we are looking to keep that going. I will be working with I am the hypnotherapy program director for the Tom Silver Foundation, and also the secretary of the board of executives. And so I oversee all of the training for the organization, for keeping his training alive. And I oversee the entire hypnotherapy piece. So making sure that hypnotherapists are utilizing sound methods and techniques and doing it ethically and, you know, within good moral standing. So I'm the one overseeing all of that. And the other piece that we are doing with the Tom Silver Foundation outside of the education part is we are actively seeking opportunities to get into underserved communities where there is rampant addiction, rampant pain, and just situations of like homelessness and things like that. We want to get in there and work with those communities and free these people of their mental prisons in the form of substances and limiting beliefs and things like that at no cost to them. And so one of our approaches to this is through paid hypnotherapy services to anyone who is looking to be free of those addictions themselves from people who can afford it, right? So people, Tom worked with a lot of celebrities. So celebrities want to get, you know, help memorizing a script or get through, you know, some of them like Jennifer Aniston had a fear of flying. She saw a hypnotist, no longer has a fear of flying. Jimmy Kimmel was one that Tom was friends with. And so working with people who can afford hypnotherapy. And the whole idea is it's like paying it forward. Mm. Anyone who is paying for hypnotherapy services or paying for a certification or paying for a speaking engagement or some sort of lecture series or anything like that, all of that goes to fund people getting the service for free who desperately need it and can't afford it. So essentially, people going to us for therapeutic purposes are also contributing to charity.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it's kind of a beautiful full circle thing. Tom did so much work for those who were less fortunate and never charged them a dime when they couldn't afford it. You know, there were people who would come to him moments notice struggling with alcohol addiction, and he would just say, come on in, let's just do this. Yeah. You know, you got $50 to your name, keep it. Let's just do this. Yeah. You know, and he impacted so many lives, and we want to keep that going. We want to help people find that freedom, and so we're going to be looking into grants and things like that as well. But you know, one of the faster ways that we get this stuff going is I am also offering free pain relief sessions to everyone. So as my free thing to the world, like Tom used to do for so many people, I do very effective pain relief sessions. You can read my Google reviews if you want. They're very effective. I've been able to bring people from a 10 out of 10 pain scale. Like, they are excruciating pain in their experience. And I bring them down to a zero, and it only takes about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And that zero is lasting longer than over-the-counter medication does. Advil, Motrin, Excedrin doesn't touch it. This lasts far longer and doesn't fry your organs.
Right, exactly.
You know, but so that's one thing that I am offering to everybody. Anybody who needs pain relief, whether it's a headache, whether it's chronic pain, whether it's an injury, you know, I offer that at no charge, just as a service honoring my late friend and our organization's namesake.
Yeah. That's amazing, because I want to thank you for taking over what he started and doing his work. And I think it's very, very fitting that you're bringing up to light what this word is. A lot of people still think it's like the devil's work, you know. And anytime you get to share knowledge and facts, speaks volumes, you know. So mm-hmm. Yeah, so
exactly.
Thank you about that, you know. And here's a quick question: So you said you had people come in and get cured pretty much right away, you know?
Yeah.
What percent of their brain, what percent of that brain that has the defect, I guess, what percent unlocks it when you are doing this hypnotism? You know what I'm saying?
Let me see if I can answer that from this standpoint. So if we think of the brain, we think of the mind, right? Because the brain is the physical. If you think of it like a computer, the brain is a computer, right? The mind is all of the internal components that make it happen, right? It's you powered it on. The brain as the brain is the casing, right?
Yeah.
And the mind is the computer, and you've got your hard drive and you've got your RAM, right? So, and all the things in between is like the processor and whatever else. I used to work in IT, so I'm a little bit of a nerd there. But so the part of our brain where we are conscious and we are aware is like the screen on the computer. That's the RAM at its capacity there, right? So the RAM is what is actively being used in our minds right now. We're paying attention to it, right? That's the random access memory. And that's everything we see on the screen that my computer's doing right now. I see you and your green hat and the orange microphone and your guar shirt and all that stuff. And that is the RAM at work right there. And then everything below that is not what we see, is really the power behind everything. And that's the subconscious, right? The subconscious, unconscious, preconscious mesh. That's always changing how much of what is happening. Unconscious, we think of those things as like the autonomic nervous system, the your heart beating, your breathing. Those are unconscious things, right? You're not thinking through those things at all. Your body is just doing.
Right, just doing.
Now, the subconscious is basically all of the, if you're familiar with computers at all or programming. It's like the daemons in the background, right? The it's all of the software functioning that it's not the pretty stuff, right? It's the stuff that's keeping the pretty stuff going. It's the foundational stuff. And that is like 90% of what our brain is actually using. The power of the brain, 90% of that is subconscious. And so if we think of it that way, what we are doing is when we're hypnotized, we are bringing down the activity levels of the consciousness and we are bringing up, excuse me, I have six kids, so I don't sleep. we are bringing up the subconscious focus. We're sort of intertwining everything in a different way. Things are communicating a little bit differently. And we are drawing focus and attention to other areas. So our conscious mind is still picking up when we're hypnotized. It's still picking up on physical touch. You'll still feel people, you know, tapping you. If a bug lands on you, like I said, you'll still be able to swat it away. You're going to hear everything and smell and taste and see everything that's going on all around you, right? All your senses are still technically at work there. You just don't really pay much attention to those things because you're more inward. And so I would say it's hard to say what percentage is being used in those moments because it's not 100% of your brain is being used. I would argue pretty much at all times. It's just in what ways, right? Like my computer is being 100% used right now, but in what ways? It's not, you know, I'm not rendering video. I'm not rendering, you know, I'm not bouncing any tracks or anything like that. But it is still 100% being used, right? Doesn't mean that 100% of the CPU is active, right. but it's you know what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I do.
Does that answer the question?
It does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I guess it would be harder to. Because if something's on, oh, it's on, right? But some part of the thing is not all there yet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like you're not paying the same attention to things. So if you think of it this way, like this is a fun analogy. If you're sitting on the couch or something, you're watching a movie, and you're eating ice cream, and you're paying more attention to the movie while you're eating the ice cream, you still taste the ice cream, but it's a much different experience than when the TV is off and you are focused solely on eating the ice cream.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you think of the pain that I'm helping people through, and some people won't taste the ice cream at all when they're watching something. They won't even remember that they ate it, and they'll be like, what happened to my ice cream, right?
All milk, dude, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But so it's a similar sort of thing. So it's where your focus is. That's where your body is going to send, your brain is going to send energy there.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. So we have in our brains something called the reticular activating system. Some people call it the RAS for short. The reticular activating system acts as the brain's filter. And so it's the same thing. Whereas if you are the type of person who sees atrocities everywhere, you believe the world is a horrible place and you just think everything is terrible, you are going to find every single terrible thing going on around you all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas if you are someone more like myself, and I would imagine like you, you have a very positive disposition to you. But if you are someone who's more upbeat, every time someone asks me how I'm doing, my answer is every day is a good day. And because the reticular activating system grabs that and says, okay, I'm going to find the goodness. I'm going to reinforce that. Perfect. So the more you train your RAS to see certain things, the more it's going to see them.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you buy a blue car, you suddenly see blue cars everywhere.
Right.
Same thing.
Yeah. And you do, you know? Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Positively is everything to everybody, you know, and I'm pretty sure that, positivity needs to be everywhere instead of just certain places, you know? So, all right.
Amen.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you for that. Okay. So we do have three more questions before we let you go to bed. Because you have six kids, you need to relax, you know, settle down.
I'll be getting my toddlers to bed first, and then I can get ready. Well, and then I got to get my older three to bed, and then I can get ready for bed.
Yeah, but do you actually sleep through the night at all?
No, because I have two toddlers who every night crawl into bed and want to cuddle up to us, and I have to pick them up and carry them back to their bed and lay them down, and then I get back in bed, and then the other one does it.
It's a never-ending cycle for the
It's a constant train. It's okay. It's worth it. I love every second of it, honestly.
I mean, kids are fantastic, you know, sometimes. So, well, I sympathize with you, you know, because I really like my sleep, but sometimes I can't go to bed, you know. But like I said before, we do have three more questions, and then we'll let you go. Okay, so let's do this. These are going to be music questions now, okay? You have four options. So we're going to do like a Mount Rushmore of your favorite four. Okay, you have four bands. If you want to do five, we can do five, but most do four. What's your top four bands ever, or singers, or songs,
Oof. So it's hard because they rotate.
Right.
The two that don't rotate are the Beatles, number one, top of the list every single time.
I love you for that.
Nirvana, as we talked about.
Right. Yeah.
Nirvana's number two all time. Love Nirvana so much. You can't fake the quality in Kurt's voice.
No.
And then, so let's see,
number three
right now belongs to Korn.
We did. Yes. Cool. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
I love Korn. And I'm not ashamed to admit it. My hair says I love Korn.
Right.
Brian Welsh, if you're watching or listening, I want to be friends with you because we have a lot of the same values and I just think you're cool.
I'll get on my next show and then have you help me.
Let's get it going. Let's all just hang out. Like I'll just fly over to you. We'll hang out and all three of us will. Number four.
Yeah.
That's a really tough one.
There's so many good bands out there, you know.
It's a ridiculous number of good bands out there.
Right.
I'm trying to think of what I listen to most right now, though, as far as like other bands, because there's a lot that I've grown up with that I really love. But I don't know if I would put them up there with those guys. I think I might go with Linkin Park right now.
I had a dream about Linkin Park last night. I don't know.
Yeah, I even like them without Chester. I miss Chester, but I even like them with what's her face? Is it Emily something?
Emily Armstrong.
Emily King Armstrong. Yeah, she was from Dead Sarah or something like that.
Dead Sarah is a really really great group. Yeah, and
her voice though. I mean,
her voice is killer. Yeah.
Yeah, you miss Chester, but she brings. I would say she brings the same intensity, with a different quality.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think I love Linkin Park.
Yeah, I don't know why I had a dream about Chester and Linkin Park last night. Maybe it's kind of like a premonition or something. You know, I don't know. It could be.
Yeah.
So, all right. Last question, and then we're going to sleep for 2 hours or something, right?
Whatever it is,
All right. Okay, so hardest question. Is there a song, artist, or album, okay, that you could hear right now, but you cannot tell me how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
Like, ask me that again.
Okay, so like when you hear a song, what song after you hear it, can you not explain it, how it makes you feel deep inside? It's so emotional to you that you can't express your feelings towards that song or artist.
That's a great question. like it's got such an emotional power that you just don't have words kind of thing.
Yes, sir. That's it. Guess when words fail, music speaks, you know.
Holy Forever by Chris Tomlin.
Okay.
That song hits me in the feels so hard every time I hear it. Like it's one of the only songs that will actually bring tears to my eyes every single time I hear it. It swells within you and just hits you.
I love it when it
does. Which is so funny because that's so different than any of the bands that I just named.
But yeah, I mean, Korn and Beatle. Yeah. Something. Chris Tomlin, for people who don't know, is a Christian musician, and I love him to death too. He's like one of the greats, you know, great Christian music musicians. So, well, Tommy, I do support you on LinkedIn. So everybody, I share everything that you do on LinkedIn now.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I do.
But you can go to, okay, so we're going to do TomSilverFoundation.org.
Yep, TomSilverFoundation.org.
And they can contact you by going to the contact us.
If you go there, you should, I think it's active now. You should even be able to schedule a free consultation with me through that. And if not, you can contact me on my website, which is, I have two, but the main one is likeahypnotist.com, because I do everything like a hypnotist. And I also have hockeytownhypnotist.com.
Hockeytown. Who is your favorite hockey team?
Detroit Red Wings. Even though they haven't hit the playoffs in 9 years, it's the Red Wings all day.
When I played street hockey back when I was 14, 15, I could not get over the Blackhawks. You know, Jeremy Roenick and Ed Belfour.
Yeah.
Favorite two guys ever, you know.
Yeah. I think of Pavel Datsyuk, and I think of the Russian Five just in general. For the Red Wings, you know, Konstantinov, Fetisov, Larionov, Kozlov, and Fedorov.
Can't go wrong with the Red Wings, brother, you know?
So. No, I agree.
Yeah. So we do honestly love you, and I can't wait to meet you. Maybe I can get you back on whenever I interview Head from Korn. That'll be probably the greatest thing on earth for us to do, you know?
Yeah, right.
And you can share your memories with him if you want to, you know.
I'll send him my book. I'll send you my book if you want.
Send me your book and send us your book, you know. Please come back anytime you want to. I hope this was fun for you. It's been delightful for me too. So I can't wait to talk to you next time, all right?
Man, it was so fun talking to you. I can't wait to do it again.
Thank you, brother. All right.
All right, James. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And with that, everybody, always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.